You're listening to Right Back Atcha, the podcast celebrating noughties pop music.
Welcome back, David. It's great to see you.
I mean, we live under the same roof, but we've not been in podcast mode for a hot minute.
This is work for me. I've not spoken to you since the last episode. this is a completely professional working relationship. So I hope you've been well.
It's like when, like, the Spice Girls, after the second album, they all, like, kind of go off to do their own thing and then they have to come back and do Forever.
Yeah.
And then, oh, hi.
And it is, you know, better than ever. We're all, you know... It feels really good. I am so happy to be back.
It's been great. And, you know, first and foremost, we just want to say thank you to everyone who has taken the time to listen to season one of Right Back Atcha.
Yes, thank you so much for listening, guys. I hope you've had as much fun listening to it as we've had making it. And thank you for just, like, letting us spiel about all this silly pop music that we love talking about.
You know, the noughties really is our favourite era, like... Anything from the year 2000 to 2009, that's kind of the whole point of our podcast. We just want to pay tribute and just go on a trip down memory lane and you know, revisit our favourite unsung pop heroes.
Exactly, but today is something a little bit different. Today is not the start of Series 2. We're doing a one-off special to tease you, but don't worry, Series 2 is coming very soon. But what are we here for today, David?
Britney, bitch.
When this episode is dropped released, it's going to be 20 years since the Baby One More Time single. So we are taking a special episode to just talk about this era of Britney. We're not going to go beyond Oops, I Did It Again. You know, we are doing the first album only.
This is a capsule collection.
I'm so excited to talk about it. I love Britney Spears so much. And there is no way you could talk about her career in one episode. I'm hoping this is going to be the start of a future of specials you might see dotted around that we can really sort of cover the career as it goes on. But yeah, we're going to get into Baby One More Time today.
So Joel is actually wearing his Britney top today.
Yes.
Just to get him in the spirit.
I always have the Holy Spirit with me. This top is the top from Target, which I wanted for ages.
David, oh, he would have shut up about this. Honestly, I've never heard anyone go on and on about one t-shirt before. Is this even the official merch?
It's the official merch, but Target would not import it to the UK, but I finally got it, you know. After hearing every single person I semi-know going to the States, I finally got it.
Okay, so obviously, Baby One More Time, very iconic debut single by the great Miss Britney Spears. We wanted to sort of set the scene a little pre-Baby One More Time. Who was Britney then? And basically everything that led to the point of this single arriving and causing such a big stir, because as much as it seemed like an overnight thing, it really wasn't.
No.
And the kind of positioning of where Britney was and this single in the year 1998, you know, the kind of top 40 climate that the single was dropping in, it really did shift things in pop music. So we just want to set the scene and go back, basically, Joel.
Go back to the beginning. Britney Jean Spears was born December 2nd, 1981 in Kentwood, Louisiana. Well, she's from Kentwood, Louisiana. And, you know, it's a small southern town. You wouldn't expect such a huge global star to come from there. You know, she had a love for music and dance. She auditioned and was on the Mickey Mouse Club. But she originally auditioned when she was 8 years old. And they loved her, but they said, you know, Britney, you're a bit too young. I mean, 8 years old.
Now, you come from, like, a performing arts background.
Oh, God, yeah.
So, at 8 years old for you, were you already, like, interested in stuff like this? Were you going for auditions like Britney? I mean...
Take it back to our first episode. I don't know how old I was for the S Club Juniors auditions, because that would have been one of the first sort of big things. I auditioned for. But I did do sort of local theatre. I was in the, like, doing things like the local production of Oliver when I was very young, and things like that. So I was always very interested in it. You know, I guess me and Brittany have that in common.
And your mum was just like Lynn Spears.
She was.
Momager.
The Lynn Spears of Essex.
Shout out to Wendy, we love you.
They sort of referred her. They said, you're too young, but we want you to go to New York and see this agency. So she eventually saw that, and, you know, things happened. She was on Star Search. She was the understudy in Ruthless, and she was the understudy to Laura Bell Bundy.
I mean, what Britney's career could have been.
What Britney's career could have been.
She could have been a Broadway star with a country record.
Well, Ruthless was recently on in London, and I went to see it purely because of the Britney Spears reference and connection. And it's this great sort of dark comedy that the child holds the show. It's all around them, and, you know, they have to be able to sing, dance, and have acting and comedy chops, dark comedy chops. So I would love to have seen
Britney
in this. She would have been... you can tell she would have bloody killed it. There was the rumours in the mid-noughties that she was going to do Sandy on Grease, which, you know, I'm still here for if it ever happens. The other rumours that Jessica Simpson was going to star in the film remake of Grease. 2 years down from her, I think it was 2 years later after her original audition for the Mickey Mouse Club, she finally gets cast with Christina Aguilera and Justin Timberlake, but also Ryan Gosling, Kelly Russell and J.C. Chazet.
Amazing.
Literally icons only. These kids doing absolutely everything, singing, dancing, skits. And then I think her and Christina were on it for about a year and a half to 2 years before it got cancelled.
Yeah.
Britney went back to high school briefly to have a normal life. And then she re-decided that she wanted to get back into the industry.
She was like, nah, stuff this. I can't be sitting in a canteen with you guys. Like, I'm out of here.
It's just in her. She lives and breathes it.
I love watching the Star Search performance, that one bit of Star Search performance that they kept bringing up in her early interviews.
Those vocals.
Brilliant.
Powerhouse.
How old was she? 10? So after the Mickey Mouse Club era, Momager started, you know, trying to make connections for Britney. Mm. You know, where else can I take my little girl to fulfill her dreams? She started getting in talks with Lou Pearlman.
Lou Pearlman, who I've met.
So just to let you know, Lou Pearlman is the man who started the Backstreet Boys.
And NSYNC.
And NSYNC.
And then was in prison and...
Oh, he did some bad stuff.
Yeah, he basically conned them all out of their money. Do you remember Us Five?
No.
I met them. Maybe I spoke about it in the Ashley Simpson episode because I met them that night. I went to see Ashley. It was very exciting.
And Lou Pearlman.
And Lou Pearlman was there. And me and my friends kind of, I was the one that recognised them because I watched their reality show at the time that no one watched. Unfortunately, you know, at 15, it didn't lead to further meetings of me being a boy band member and conned out of all the money. You know, I could have been the UK Lance Bass.
You really could have been. Where was Wendy at the time? She should have pushed you forward with a couple of your headshots and a demo cassette.
No, Wendy's not like that. It was always me pushing it.
So Lou was actually putting together a 5-piece girl band.
Yes.
Called Innocence.
Innocence.
With an S-E-N-S-E. Innocence.
That also had one or two girls from the Mickey Mouse Club in as well.
Yeah, Nikki.
Nikki,
whatever her surname
is. Acts now as well. She's in MTV's Awkward playing the lead's mum.
Britney was considered for the lineup. She went and auditioned for it.
It's not clear, but she was in a very initial lineup. And then Lynn was asking family friend, entertainment lawyer Larry Rudolph.
What to do, yeah.
What to do, who, you know, this is when it gets very interesting.
This is when it gets exciting. So I think she would have already gone to audition for Innocence. But she hadn't quite fully committed to it. But, like, that was the appetite of the time for A&Rs. They all wanted the next big pop group.
Yeah.
The Spice Girls were massive. Backstreet Boys were everywhere. You know, it was just the flavour of the time. No one was really thinking, oh, we're going to have the next generation Madonna or Tiffany or Debbie Gibson at this point, you know. It just wasn't what people were looking for. So it kind of, so Britney really stuck to her guns there and kind of thought, you know what, I'm just going to do this on my own, which is very exciting. So Larry Rudolph at the time, I mean, I think he was mainly, he was looking after Toni Braxton and the Backstreet Boys.
But as a lawyer. Yeah, he wanted a demo and they couldn't afford a demo. So Britney sung, literally got a tape and sung a Whitney Houston karaoke and sent some pictures. And then Larry liked that enough to say, right, you need a proper demo. And then this is when she recorded the unused Toni Braxton song.
It was interesting because I think in the early stages, especially at that age of Britney, she was singing in quite a deep kind of... She was using her lower register a lot more. I was reading a lot about
this. Yeah, I mean, it's something... If you go on kind of any of the fan comments or anything, it's all like the Britney stans, self-included, always really talk about this amazing, powerful lower voice she has.
Yeah.
And that later on the line, Jive kind of... pushed her away from that.
Yeah.
But she does have this incredible lower voice.
And you can totally hear her doing like a Toni Braxton demo, like to that full effect. But what came of it was only three record companies were interested. So it was Mercury, there was Epic, and then obviously Jive.
Jive, who Britney did sign with, label mates being Steps. Apparently, according to the editing of Steps Reunion, Britney was a big part to do with the breakup of Steps, even though...
Please!
Even though that was album one for Steps, and then they still did, like, however many albums. The Joys of Editing Kids, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, and fellow British girl, Ellie Campbell. Shout out to Ellie Campbell.
Joel and I spent one Saturday night or Friday night, one of the many that we just have, like, a bottle of wine between us, and we're just on YouTube... And we found this girl, Ellie Campbell. I don't even know how it crept into our consciousness.
No. And then do you remember, we watched all her stuff and then we forgot her name and we couldn't find her again.
We really, really wanted to reference her in one of the season one episodes and we just couldn't remember her name. But, you know, bless her heart, she really was very like the UK Britney, but a little bit more shopping mall.
I think she was great. She just could have done being the lead vocalist in a band.
Mm.
Just that
she
little...
should have been in Innocence.
She should have been. Maybe Innocence would have worked. What were you thinking, Jive? You could have put that together.
So at that time, Jive bit. They were really the only record label that wanted to give Britney a shot. But even then, the main A&R guy, and by the way, guys, a lot of this sort of researchy stuff that I'm spieling about now, I got from this amazing book called The Song Machine, which is written by John Seabrook. So it talks about basically... how the making of some of the most iconic pop hits are in our time. You know, everything from Since You've Been Gone to, like, Britney and Backstreet Boys, Ace of Base. Like, it's an incredible, incredible book, so please do check it out. So anyway, in this book, it talks about the main A&R guy at Jive always wanting to find the next Mariah Carey or Whitney Houston.
And like, that he did.
But at that point, they thought, you know what, someone like Britney, quite inexpensive to sign and to kind of build up. So why not we take a risk? But they... included a 90-day get-out clause for them.
Really?
So basically, if within 90 days of signing Britney, they decide, look, the sessions aren't working, we don't feel that they can drop her. So there was a lot of work being put in that first 90 days to kind of figure out whether they wanted to go further with Britney. Because at the time, like I said, no one was really checking for this solo teen female pop entity. Everyone was talking about bands and whatnot. The very, very initial sessions for Britney, once she signed with Jive, I mean, she said at the time that she thought maybe they wanted her to go in a kind of younger Sheryl Crow direction.
Because obviously we know Britney as we know her now, but that is very interesting that that could have been initial thought or Britney's initial thought.
She was paired up with a writer-producer called Eric Foster White, who at the time had written one single for Whitney Houston and, like, you know, done a ballad for Backstreet Boys. They did From the Bottom of My Broken Heart.
Wow.
Autumn Goodbye.
I love Autumn Goodbye.
Love Autumn Goodbye. Soda Pop. And you can hear in these sessions that her voice was, you know, she was still using that really powerful lower register.
Yes.
But Jive was starting to encourage her to sing in a higher register because that's where she sounds a little bit more girly and a little bit more younger. So you can hear that sort of transition happening. But also at that time, Swedish pop teen queen Robin was coming up. She had a top 10 hit in the US. Show Me Love was massive at the time. So the A&R guy kind of thought, okay, maybe Britney can be the American Robin. you know, girl next door kind of vibe with a bit of attitude and a bit of sass. Yeah. You know, maybe this could work. Someone at the label showed Brittany Robbins Show Me Love. And she was like, she loved the song. She thought it was really cool. But she thought the video was boring. And she initially said, the video is all wrong. If that were me, I'd be in a mini skirt. I'd be dancing. I'd be having fun. She saw that that kind of upbeat stuff, you know, would bring forward her strongest suit, which is dancing. So they started to listen to her a little bit more. And that's when they hooked her up with Max Martin.
Oh, my God.
So the very first meeting with Max Martin, they actually flew him to New York to meet Brittany. And she apparently initially said she was scared of him because he looked like a member of Motley Crue or something.
Oh, no.
Because he had, like, long hair and he just looked like some sort of rocker guy. The minute he started talking to Brittany, he just knew exactly what to do with her. He already had success with Robin, but Robin was becoming more independent. She was calling the shots. She was trying to tell Max what to do and all that. So Max said, you know, I can work with this young girl. You know, we can create something together without her telling me what to do. So there started a very, very special partnership, which leads us to the year 1998. Now we are officially cooking with gas with Britney's first album. After meeting with Britney in New York, Max reflected and, you know, spoke with his songwriting and producer partner, Rami Yacoub. They had a song in a bag already for TLC a year ago.
So yeah, TLC, and also it was offered to the Backstreet Boys.
Yeah, which they rejected. And the song is, of course, Baby One More Time.
Imagine people turning down that song.
It just wasn't right for TLC.
It wasn't right for TLC. Like, thank God people did turn that down, that song. Because this is the definition of a debut single. It set up the scene for 20 years. There is just not a song that is like it. It's iconic, it's defining, it really set her up for the path that it was Britney from the get-go.
The sound of Baby One More Time is quite interesting because while it was, you know, in a lot of ways that classic kind of Swedish pop beat that we'd already heard with a lot of Max Martin's production, mm-hmm. in his mind when he was writing it, he was writing an R&B song, you know, bless his heart, this Swedish guy writing this song, thinking this is exactly what black American R&B artists like TLC would want to sing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when it reaches the ears of A&Rs in America and TLC, they're like, no, this is not R&B, what you've delivered us. But what it is something special, but it's not for us. It's not for TLC. And it just clicked with Britney. So there she was, 16-year-old Britney from Kentwood, on her very first overseas trip. She went to Stockholm in about April, late April, May of the year 1998. And she recorded in the iconic Sharon studio in Stockholm. She did no less than 6 songs in 10 days.
Get it, girl.
4 of which were the singles.
Amazing.
So it was just a very, very productive trip, mm-hmm. needless to say. But I don't know if you read this, Joel, but like Britney was saying apparently at the time that she was really nervous the first few days.
I mean, you would be.
So she didn't cut Baby One More Time first. The first song that she laid vocals down for was actually Sometimes.
Lovely song. It's actually really sad that Britney doesn't like Sometimes that much because I love it. I think it's a beautiful song.
Oh, we'll get to Sometimes because I have my thing about Sometimes.
Okay.
Oh, I have my thing about Sometimes. So anyway, she recorded Sometimes first and then apparently she like went out one night and, you know, went out dancing or clubbing or whatever it is she did. But the next day she came back to the studio. She was feeling more relaxed and she said, you know, ready to do Baby One More Time. You know?
Bless her.
Because she said, you know, you have to be relaxed when you're recording that. Which I absolutely love. And then comes the summer of 1998. And that's when Britney hit the road.
Wow, and hit the road she did. So, did she do the Mall Tour first or the NSYNC Tour first?
The Mall Tour.
I mean...
Very classic Tiffany move.
Very classic Tiffany move. So iconic. I mean, imagine going to Lakeside or Blue Water, our big shopping malls here, and literally, who is going to be the greatest performer of our generation performing? Like, I watched the concert on YouTube today. It's great, full of power, confidence, vocals. The audience are screaming, like... Oh, wow. Like, that just doesn't happen today.
So she did a 4-song set, Sometimes, Baby, One More Time. And I think there might have been one or two covers there. It was just her and two backup dancers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she would take time out to meet with magazine editors and talk to local media, local press, which is so brilliant because that was where she started to build her fan base from the ground up.
Get it, girl.
You see, you think like Baby One More Time drops is on TRL and all that, and that's where it happened.
She was doing the groundwork.
She was doing the groundwork like 4, 5 months, 6 months before it dropped.
The long game. Obviously, this iconic song, Baby One More Time, you know what goes with an iconic song? An iconic, groundbreaking video. But that wasn't originally the concept for the video. The concept was going to be sort of a lot more animated, cartoony.
Basically, they weren't going to take any chances. They really wanted to get it right with Britney's debut video. So they got a veteran music video director.
Oh my God, Nigel Dick, absolute legend. Worked with your favourite Vitamin C, Jessica Simpson, Mandy Moore. Directed S Club Seeing Double, the film, and also MTV's Together, which is kind of quite a bold move for MTV back in the day. It's like an MTV's boy band version of Spinal Tap.
The truth is, he was a 45-year-old male from North Yorkshire. So he doesn't quite know what the average teenage girl in America wants.
No.
So he came up with this concept of animating Britney, like Powerpuff Girl style. She absolutely hated it. The label hated it. Nobody knew how to tell him. So they just rang him and put the phone to Britney. And that was when she suggested, let's do a video where I'm just a girl at school and we're looking at lots of hot boys. And he was like, kind of go, okay, that's the point where I realized I don't know what teenage girls like to see and what their life is like. I should listen to this actual teenager.
Now we have these iconic, epic dance scenes. It was shot at the high school where they made Grease, so it sets the tone for that. And it feels like it could be taken from the modern day Grease if Grease was made in 1998. These great visuals of her sort of on the basketball court, I think that's what the outdoor scene is. I mean, obviously in the classroom and through the corridors. I don't know about you, David, I thought that's what secondary school, high school was going to be like. I love when they're in the gymnasium indoors. They're all in the group, like, and they're going, she does great, I should know more of a technical term, but I don't, but where it's literally like you throw your body forward and back with the head. And
the time so that was your favourite scene, the gymnasium, where she's in that yellow top?
I think, well, because it's something we've watched a million times over 20 years. The schoolgirl outfit is iconic, and there's a reason why that is still a huge pop culture reference 20 years down the line. You know, people do say Britney, it's always a visual gag to that outfit.
Yeah, and that was 100% her idea. It was 100% her idea to get these Catholic schoolgirl outfits and, you know, she was like, oh, they look a bit dorky, let's tie them up. I read somewhere that she told the director to go to Target for the outfits.
Yeah, nothing cost more than $17.
Which is brilliant.
The whole video is so vivid. Even the dancers and the extras are so memorable in your mind. Like, there's that scene of the girl at her locker and she sort of shakes her head to the camera. Felicia, who was Britney's assistant, having a cameo as the teacher.
So Felicia actually was the one who accompanied, chaperoned Britney when she went to Sweden to record the song. So,
do you remember when this was released? It was just everything.
It cannot be underestimated that Britney, and especially, you know, the Baby One More Time video was a very seminal part of MTV's pop history, especially for that generation.
Oh,
because,
my God.
You know, we all look at MTV as being such a pivotal network, especially in the late 90s. You know, they were meant to be top 40, but still an arbiter of cool at the time. And not every single Backstreet Boys or New Kids on a Block music video was an automatic given MTV playlist. They usually keep pop videos at an arm's length until the year 1998, where a program called Total Request Live...
Oh my God.
...started. Once TRL came out, it was all about what people wanted. It was, you know, the most popular vote. So that's where pop music videos started to get in.
Yes.
And Baby One More Time came at just the right time.
Not only was Britney lucky that Baby One More Time happened, the video happened, TRL happened, also MTV and TRL are lucky that all these different markets coming together and made it the huge success that it was.
After that, you know, pop music videos upped their mother effing game.
Bloody hell did they. It's changed the path. It's set a new standard.
The single drops 23rd of October. So on November the 21st, 98, it entered the Billboard charts for the first time. Number 17.
Wow.
Day one alone, 500,000 copies sold.
It's mental. This song has gone on to be one of the best-selling singles of all time. It sold 10 million copies worldwide.
Crazy. That's like most people's careers. It took about 2.5 months for Baby One More Time to climb up the charts to hit number one. It goes to replace My Girl, Brandy's Have You Ever. The Boy's Mind was number one for 13 weeks that year. So Baby One More Time was number one for 2 weeks on the Billboard Hot 100, and then it was replaced by Monica. Can you imagine? Britney was the sandwich between Brandy and Monica. Okay, so quickly before we end a very successful and impactful 1998 for Britney, she embarked on a tour supporting NSYNC in November that year. The NSYNC in concert tour was bloody epic. I mean, at the time, I absolutely paid NSYNC no mind, not even like one brain cell of a mind, and I regretted that. But this tour, looking on Wikipedia, had some amazing support acts.
Britney would have done the initial 40 dates, and I think Bewitched in that time, Icons Only. And then, obviously, Britney would have progressed to be our own superstar. So then there was the next wave of Britney's. My absolute fave, Mandy Moore, was a support act.
Queen.
I mean, Icons Only, imagine being at that tour.
And also Fergie's girl group, Wild Orchid.
Really? I told someone... because Black Eyed Peas are back, but without Fergie. And I said, oh, yeah, well, you know, they were a band before Fergie. There'll be a band after. And I was like, you know, Fergie was in a girl band before Black Eyed Peas. And they were like, Fergie was in a girl band? I was like, yeah, come on.
Yeah, get with the program, yeah. Malaysia's number one selling international act, Wild Orchid.
Really?
No, I'm joking. Oh. I don't know if they were, but I remember seeing like their posters everywhere in the kind of CD section of your supermarkets.
Wow.
Looking at the chart in 1998, there was nothing like Baby One More Time on top of it, definitely. Lauryn Hill, Deborah Cox, Casey and JoJo, Savage Garden, and, you know, Elton John and Celine Dion. And if you look at the charts after Baby One More Time, dance-oriented music started to dominate. Cher's Believe was a big hit in 99. Ricky Martin, J-Lo's debut single.
I'll get it, girl, J-Lo.
Let's just very quickly just run through the stats. I know you already touched on it before, but Baby One More Time was number one in more than 18 countries.
And I'm so thankful that the UK was one of them.
UK was one of them, double platinum, and it was number one in Australia as well, all around Europe. It actually was Max Martin's very first US number one, so he was super stoked, I'm sure. In the UK, it sold over 460,000 copies in its first week, which... broke the record for biggest first week sales by a female act in the UK at the time.
Wow.
Boom. It would go on to sell over 1.4 million copies by the end of 99. So,
oh,
January 1999, the Baby One More Time album.
January 12th.
Let's go.
Oh my God. So I did have this album, and I was at a big Tesco's. Like a Tesco's Extra.
Tesco's Extra?
Yeah, it's just like Tesco's, but it's extra honey. So there's just people giving you sass. And no, so like regionally, or like if you have a car, there's big, huge Tesco's. And I was with my dad, and I begged him to get me the album, and he did. And it's very rare that those things would sort of just happen outside of a birthday or Christmas. Mm. So it was quite monumental. I must have had some real persuasive powers those days. Or maybe I did save up my pocket money, actually, and that was the album. As we know, that I would buy the album and just listen to the single. So I remember we would then be in his car, got the album there, we're in the car, and I just kept putting that song on repeat, track one, Baby One More Time, again and again and again. And then I remember listening, I did listen to the album. I remember thinking that the album version of You Drive Me Crazy was so weird. There's like a xylophone. I don't know if it is a xylophone. I remember thinking it was. Like, it just sounded really strange to me at the time, but I loved it. Listening to it as an adult, shall we break it down, the album? Let's skip the singles, but break this album down.
Joel, I have a confession.
You haven't listened to the album?
No. The very first time I heard this album was about 2 hours ago. I completely ignored this album. My proper Britney stand-up started with the Britney album.
In the lead up to Glory, I don't know if you remember, I made a point of listening to every single Britney album because I'd be putting it on in the kitchen and you'd be like, you're still going through this, like, look back of the Britney albums.
I mean, I would never complain, but, you know.
That's when I really sort of got into it. The album version of You Drive Me Crazy, I love it. A rock-infused version of You Drive Me Crazy. Probably set the template for Ashley Simpson's career. I love the guitar solo. I love watching the Mortal performance of her dancing to this. It is just... It's because she is setting the template of the teeny bopper, which then the things that follow are that this still has the sort of more mid-90s feel to it. It's still, this album's off the back of that, and then everything, you know, the Christina, the Mandy, the Jessica is off the back of this. So it has the sort of the generic teeny bop feel, whereas this is kind of somewhere in between, which I love. Soda Pop. I mean, Britney goes sort of a bit reggae. It's great. It is funny, though, just of the album generally, that you think of Britney, this teeny pop dance act. There are a lot of ballads on this album.
There was a duality to Britney's image that her and her label were working on. You know, there was the sexy Lolita stuff that with Baby One More Time was being teased. But also, they really do want her to be that kind of sweet girl next door. Mm.
But yeah, I mean, as Britney said, Soda Pop is a song that just makes you want to go outside. Shibop, shibop. It's a classic. I Will Be There is a lovely song.
Okay, so this one is one of my favourites on the album. Strangely enough, sounds a lot like the Celine Dion single, That's the Way It Is, which also is produced by Max Martin.
Time may tear us apart, but I will still love you. I love this song. The cheesy ballad, I Will Still Love You, with Britney and recording partner Don Philip. Don Philip was a label mate of Britney, Jive. They did this duet. He supported her on tour. His career didn't set off, really, so he got dropped after the first album, which only got released in Japan anyway. I think they were billing him to be the male Britney Spears. If you kind of look at him and what he was doing, he supported Britney on tour. He had two absolute bops, Make Me Love You More and Sugar. Sometimes if I'm at work, wherever I'm working as a freelancer, and if I'm kind of working late and everyone's left, I will bop those songs on and sing at the top of my voice. I like to double bill Candy by Mandy Moore and Sugar together on my solo covers album. That will be on there, the medley. He was a closeted gay man at the time, out and proud now. And basically, the industry chewed him up and spat him out. And then when Britney was on The X Factor US, he auditioned. And he has a very powerful voice back in the day. And his voice today, unfortunately, just isn't what it was.
Well, at least in the audition, it wasn't.
At least in the audition. Yeah, and him. Britney said no to him. They did this whole sort of sad edit of him being to Britney, I thought I'd never see you again. You can see on YouTube the uncut thing, and it is very clever editing. I spend my days thinking about you.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, the vocals on this is, like, very interesting.
Thinking about you, I love it.
For anyone that's ever, like, wanted, like, an example of early Britney singing at its best and, like, the kind of range and the kind of character and depth and personality that she can bring as a vocalist, this song gives you everything. Like, this is basically the book.
And it is interesting, you go back to this era and this time, all the quotes and sound bites from people that were working with her, how they were promoting it, they do keep going back to describing her as a soulful voice. And she does have a very soulful voice. And everyone takes a piss out of me, but I am still here for Britney to do one acoustic tour. I look forward to it. I've got my tickets booked. Now we're getting to my favourite. Even My Heart is a song that everyone can relate to. Everyone's been doing these emails, and it's Email My Heart, so everyone can relate to that. Bearing in mind it's 98, I feel like people had been doing emails for a few years, but bless her, like, I love listening to songs from this era that are about the internet. Email My Heart, Digital Get Down by NSYNC, Internet Girlfriend by Aaron Carter. These songs from that small capsule in time. If you know any more, at Dr. _ Joel B on Twitter, I want to know them.
At the podcast, because I want to hear it as well.
And it's, who would have thought one of the greatest Britney Spears vocals is on a song called Email My Heart. It's also a song I hold very close to my heart, because I run something called Email My Heart Film Club,
hey,
which is named after Britney. I do nostalgia screenings. That's at Email My Heart FC on all socials. And then we've got final track of the original release, The Beat Goes On, the Cher cover. It's not my favourite, if I'm honest. So then, just talking about a few bonus tracks, Autumn Goodbye.
I love Autumn Goodbye. Okay, I may not have listened to the album, but I know Autumn Goodbye.
Yeah, because I think that was the B-side to Baby All My Time. It's Deep In My Heart, which was also a B-side to Oops, I Did It Again.
Oh.
So it's funny how she's still using an early track for a B-side. And then there's also another Stop Loving You, which is nice track.
Okay, so the Baby One More Time album, it hit number one on the Billboard 200. It was number one for 6 weeks, not consecutively, but it was nonetheless number one for 6 weeks. Ended up being certified 14 times platinum.
Just a cash 14 times platinum.
Casual. In the year of 1999, apart from Britney, only Christina Aguilera and Celine Dion were the only other pop solo female chart toppers. So that shows you how rare it was.
Yeah.
And for a debut album, you know, Britney did exceedingly well.
So while we're talking about the album, let's just quickly mention, off the back of this huge success, and she basically did redefine what teen pop was, mm-hmm. every label then needed their own Britney and to fit into this supposed Britney mold. So you get Christina, you get who's the vocal Britney, you get the Mandy who's like the baby Britney, and then you get Jessica, who you watch in very early interviews is billed as the next Mariah Carey, and then it's shifted. And then obviously a smidge later you've got Willa Ford, who's kind of billed as the bad girl of pop, or that not anti Britney, but the sexier Britney. What I always think is interesting is that these girls had bleach blonde hair, straight up releasing teen dance pop, being their label's version of a Britney mold, even though if you look into it, that isn't quite what Britney was. They're just quickly all doing their own version of a Britney. And I like to call them the other Fab Four.
Shall we talk about the other singles in the Baby One More Time
yes!
album?
Sometimes I love.
Joel, I have a confession. I do not like this song.
You and Britney both.
For years, I've avoided this, but today was the first time I watched the music video in almost 20 years.
Gorgeous.
And I stand fucking corrected. This is a beautiful music video. They wanted to, like, ring it all the way back to almost shock you a little by giving you a Puritan kind of virginal Britney in all white, looking like some sort of church-going girl from the South.
Yeah.
And I love this video. And she looks so stunning.
Gorgeous. Very simple. Her long hair, her fringe. It's just sweet. It's lovely. So that went to number 21 in the States. Number 3 here. Number 2 in your homeland. While teen-dominated pop in this era. It also then dominated television. You had Dawson's Creek, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Felicity, Kerry Russell of the Mickey Mouse Club. Britney was signed on to do an episode arc of Dawson's Creek, and she was signed with a WB development deal to have her own show.
Whoa.
Which never came into fruition.
So you mean like she would play like a fictional character, like Brandy's Moesha kind of situation?
Yeah, I think it would probably be it would have been one of two things. A half an hour sitcom, a Moesha situation, or a 45 minute more drama or dramedy a la Dawson's Creek.
I would have loved that.
I would have loved that. I think what happened is she got even huger. She was big. All these things got signed on.
Yeah.
Then she got even bigger. There was absolutely no time. And then when you're that big, what do? You wait and do your first feature film. Sometimes absolutely lovely, beautiful ballad. That's one of the ones I wish she'd bring out of retirement at some point. What's been great about the Pizza Me show is that she's brought a bunch of songs out of retirement, like Crazy, like Stronger. But she just doesn't enjoy the song sometimes that much.
I just also don't think Sometimes fits into the set list that well.
Mm. My mum's favourite Britney Spears song is I'm Not a Girl, Not Yet a Woman. But her favourite song is also Sometimes because she thinks they're the same song.
Oh. How? Bless her.
She's been at my events and stuff, and then she'll be like, play I'm Not a Girl, Not Yet a Woman, and then we're like, no, and then we play Sometimes. She'll be like, you said you weren't going to play it.
I think she secretly just loves both songs.
She does. She loves
And it
Britney.
Just doesn't matter which one you play.
And so David and I both recently saw Britney in her recent tour, and David took his mum to
oh
see
my
Britney.
God.
And I'm so upset that I didn't have the genius thought to take mum. Next time Britney tours, I'm taking my mum along.
It was really special for me because my mum had never visited me in all the years I've lived in London. My mum was standing throughout the whole concert, clapping like she was in church.
Mm.
Like she was just smiling.
We were in
it.
Church. We were in our church.
My mum was smiling throughout the whole thing, and she just kept leaning over to me and go, "Britney is so beautiful. She is so talented." She's like. She just kept saying, you just can't be any kind of dancer and be on stage with Britney. You have to be on her level.
Of
I was like,
you do.
Damn right, Mum.
Mama Lim gets it.
So after April with Sometimes, Britney goes on tour in the summer. This is her first headline tour.
I've seen bits of it, and I have the Britney, grew up having the Britney Live and More DVD, which was a mix. Well, it was actually the Crazy 2K tour, which was her second tour, but it was pretty much a continuation or a reimagining of the first tour. Yeah, I just love seeing the purity of this early, the early on Britney Spears, just doing what she does best and loving it and having such a good time.
And what about the vocals?
I think until the third tour, until the Dream Within a Dream tour, there'd be live vocals at points. Onyx Hotel tour, she'd do like one song live, and then after that, no. Like, you'll watch back, there's some, like Dream Within a Dream tour, there'll be like random performances where she'll just do a song entirely live.
In the midst of this Baby One More Time tour, which went from June to September in North America only, she released her third single in August, Crazy.
This is actually in my top three Britney songs of all time.
Is it?
Yeah.
I can see that. Now, tell us about this remix coming around. It's because it was meant to be for a film.
Yeah, it was for the film Drive Me Crazy, starring Melissa Joan Hart and the guy from Entourage. I think the film had a different title, and then they changed it to Drive Me Crazy to go with the song You Drive Me Crazy. And this film, they were obviously trying to transition Melissa Joan Hart from TV to film. And it was in the era of teen films, which I love, but it's not as fun as it should be. But the great thing about it is this song and the music video, which is so much fun.
She's finished her shift as a waitress, wipes off all that makeup, lets her hair down, takes off the dorky glasses, and she goes to town and dances with the boys. Like, this was, you know, in a lot of ways, do you remember that episode in season one we talked about Billy and she had the She Wants You video.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was the kind of Billie lets her hair down.
Also a bit similar to Christina Milian's AM to PM video.
We love a girl's going out and dancing you know, having like a showdown on a dance floor. Like, yeah, we love that.
Great dance break, dancing on chairs, have fun. Also, we should say You Drive Me Crazy, number 5 in the UK, 10 in the US, 12 in Australia.
At that point with Crazy, she's had her third consecutive top 5 hit.
And then we have, so we have Born to Make You Happy and From the Bottom of a Broken Heart. So Born to Make You Happy was released as a European single, and From the Bottom of a Broken Heart was released more as a US single.
Number one
in the UK.
This makes me so happy because this is like, as much as I didn't listen to this album, I knew of this song and just, I actually would go as far as saying this is Britney's best ballad.
I just love that a fourth single, you've got the album, we've made that number one in this country. Like, what's happened between then and now? Like, I'm talking about Brexit, not Britney's career.
Yeah, of course. can we talk about the music video and how strange that was?
I think it's a precursor to Oops, I Did It Again.
Oh.
Because it's kind of that sort of semi-spacey, that main set of Oops, I Did It Again, it's a precursor to that. But what I think it's an absolutely great video, but there's something in the grading of it that she looks kind of orange, like quite fake tanned, which I don't feel like she would have on the set. It's more of, it looks like when you've recorded it on VHS off the TV and it comes off a bit orange.
I get that Born to Make You Happy is like the first kind of ballad that she's doing.
But I love this full-on dance.
The full-on dance was there, you know, which I love.
It's very sort of getting ready for your Y2K party at the Millennium look.
But at the same time, she was like looking very sad throughout the whole video. And also she was pregnant in the opening shot. Did you see that?
I didn't see that. Are you joking?
Pause the frame. She's pregnant in the opening shot.
That's just the way of a flowy top.
No. It's meant to be that she's pregnant and dreaming.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm very... Back that up. I have.
Well.
And I don't
love
know
her acting in it.
Her acting was...
Maybe this was the pilot for the WB show that never happened. I always find it funny when they're like, we're going to do one in Europe and one in America.
Hmm.
Like, because what's the point? Or it's not like one was... They're two ballads. It's not like one was like, we're going to do one more Eurodancey and one more ballady.
I think Born to Make You Happy definitely suited the European market more than From the Bottom of My Broken Heart.
The music video made it that. I mean, both songs served the world beautifully.
Okay, I'll be honest, I've never seen his music video until this morning.
Yeah.
I completely avoided this.
What I find very funny is that she has gone from Sexy Schoolgirl to then her fourth single in the States, but sort of fifth overall. Very, like, very serious girl next door with her short curly hair.
This looks like something out of Seventh Heaven.
Trying to be like, yeah, very like, sort of Christian pop, like very like, yeah, a Christian WB show. And I'm like, why isn't Jamie Lynn playing the little girl?
I'm sure Jamie Lynn put in a pitch.
So, I mean, that wraps up the Baby One More Time era. Is there anything else we want to talk about in this era? Are there any favourite performances? I love her first ever VMA performance where she comes out. It's set in the school. It's set in the classroom and she jumps out sort of very Y2K look.
Wow.
They do the roll call and then she sings Baby One More Time. And then she says, I'd like to introduce you to some friends of mine. She sings more of Baby One More Time. And then NSYNC come out and sing Tearing Up My Heart. And they sort of all did a dance break together. It's so iconic. One of my absolute favourites.
We have to say as well the kind of cross-pollination and how tight they kept this crew of NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, and Britney. I mean, I read somewhere that the early pressings of Britney's album after the final track, which was The Beat Goes On, there was apparently like a little voice note message where she introduces the Backstreet Boys' next album.
I thought it was NSYNC.
It was Backstreet Boys' Millennium album, I believe she introduced, and even had snippets of it in there. I mean, why not? They were both managed by the same people, but it was just... Talk about knowing your audience and knowing who your peers are and just really tapping into that. Like, it was just so marketing textbook 101, isn't it?
Yeah. And, I mean, there's just so many iconic moments from the get-go. There's the Rolling Stone cover where it's her hugging the Teletubby. You look back at everything, what pop culture, especially Britney, Teletubbies, you look at these things and you think, what would it be now? And it was so knowing of that time. What was the pop culture peaks? What people will look back on?
But again, like I said, it goes into the whole thing where her kind of appeal and her image was the duality of sensuality and also that innocence, you know? It's the Teletubby stuff and then with her bare midriff showing in a bed. It was sexy, but also... There was something a little bit wrong about it. I feel like if you were a middle-aged man in America looking at that cover, you would feel a little bit wrong to look at
it. Yeah, I guess we can look at it with such pure enjoyment as just two homosexual men that are never... We're just like, oh, yes, instead of like, oh, yeah. what I think is bonkers is that you look at how controversial it all was at the time, and then it's set in a way that there's been so many pop stars doing much more controversial things, and no one's battering an eyelid now. It's just because that was the first that people were so, whoa, controversial at the time. You look back at it, it's all so tame.
I mean, we didn't get to where Britney is without Madonna, obviously, but Madonna is a little bit older and she never played into the whole kind of sexy schoolgirl going a little bit naughty thing because she was already a little bit older by the time she debuted. So in a way, while she did open the door and pave the way for artists like Britney, Britney was very unique in that teen pop lane with what she did and how she played with her image and her sexuality.
And if you've not seen it, there's a great Top of the Pops performance of her singing Sometimes completely live, and it's a slightly different edit for the performance. So you see she goes to sing something else and then jumps back into another chorus or something. So it's a blink or you miss it, but it's so refreshing to see her singing live, looking great, and then going to sing something else and then just going with it. So it's not a mistake on the track, it's the mistake that she's making with her live vocals, and she just kind of goes with it. But it's a great, she's fresh, she's young, she's singing live, having a great time. So I think if you're going to check out any performances from this era, check out VMAs of her and NSYNC, check out the Grammys, and check out Sometimes on Top of the Pops. If you've got any favourite performances or moments from this era, please tweet us. We'd love to hear about them. And follow us on all socials. We're at Right Back Pod. Tweet us, Instagram us. Tweet us with your favourite moments of this era. Follow us on Instagram. We're going to put up a bunch of Britney content. And yeah, subscribe on whatever podcast platform you are listening on.
And we will be back with season two really soon.
We're going to be back with season two very soon. So if you're a new listener, please... go back. We've got 6 fantastic episodes. Go back and listen to them all, because we are going to be back really soon with season 2. And I don't know about you, David, but I'm so excited about it. We've got our initial lineup of who we want to cover, and I'm so excited to just get back into it and start talking about all our faves again.
And really, thank you everyone for your suggestions of who we should cover in season 2.
Yes, thank you everyone.
It's fueled so much thought, and it's just completely... the most exciting thing about this for us is that we... don't get to just discover this on our own or rediscover it on our own. We feel like we're doing this with you guys, and you know, you're like kind of the kind of trivia that people have been replying to us with after every episode has been absolutely amazing. So we absolutely know that there are people out there who are just as obsessed about this as we are.
Yeah,
because this truly is the best era in pop music. Come
it's
on.
The best. It's the best. It's the most fun to look back to, and we love that this is our conversation with you. So you guys are meant to be very much part of the podcast. So we want you to be part of the conversation.
We can't wait for season 2. All right. See you guys soon.
See you soon.
Hi, this is Britney Spears, and sometimes my friend can't come to the phone, and this is one of those times. So leave a message at the beep, and baby, they'll call you back one more time. And thanks for calling.
Hit me, baby, one more time.